Welcome to the April 4th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. And thank you for your participation in this event. We will start off with item A, introductions. We'll go on the screen first.
Good evening, Stacy Smith representing South Kitsap.
Okay, thank you.
I am Stephen Bowe with Central Kitsap.
Okay, and then on my left.
Good evening, Richard Chaddock from Central Kitsap.
And on my right.
Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
And I'm Joe Phillips from North Kitsap. To go over the hybrid meeting protocols, please silence all your electronic devices during the meeting if you're attending in person. Please refrain from conversations with other attendees or staff during the meeting. If you wish to comment during the public comment time, we have four methods available. First, those attending in person can sign up or can signal they're wanting to speak, and will come to the podium, state your name, and go ahead and give your comments. Second, for virtual attendees, use your raised hand button at the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Third, call-in attendees can signal by pressing *9 on your keypad. Your last four digits of your phone number will be called and you will be connected. If you're not connected right away, you may need to use *6 to unmute your phone. And then the fourth is written comment testimony can be submitted to the staff or emailed at awalston@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date of the meeting the comments are meant for, your name. The comments will be read at the appropriate time. Oh, also include the agenda item or subject you're addressing. For all commenters, please state your name and the general area you live in. Comments are limited to 2 minutes for public comments and 3 minutes for public hearings, but those times are adjustable by the chair when appropriate. With that said, we have the adoption of the agenda. So let's do this just a little differently. Unless there is any proposed changes or objections to the agenda, we will consider the agenda adopted if there are no objections or changes. Do I have any? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. So item D. Adoption of the minutes, as stated there, will be continued to the next meeting. Let's see. And then we come to our first general public comment time. Is there anyone wishing to comment to the Planning Commission at this time? Hearing none and seeing none, we will close that general public comment period and begin with our work study for the 2024 comp plan update preliminary alternative development. Mr. Baker is presenting.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to share my screen here. Let's make this work. Yeah, can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
All right. Well, Ed, we've continued our journey through the comprehensive plan update process. We are, again, addressing the preliminary alternatives, which, again, to remind everybody, is intended to be a suite of options. It's also intended to be sideboards for future conversation about a potential end result. These are sideboards are intended to be for environmental review and capital facilities review. All the maps we've seen, all the policies that we've talked about, all have implications to the environment, and they all have implications to the cost of capital facilities like roads and sewer. So again, the purpose of these alternatives is largely to ensure that we have the best sideboards for future conversation. Kitsap County has always kind of struggled with its comprehensive planning over the years. We've had kind of a war-torn relationship with the Growth Management Act in our past. Some new things have cropped up this comprehensive plan cycle that were not fully intended. The county had learned a lot of lessons about what not to do related to population and urban growth area sizes, and I can go on and on. And we've learned from those. Now we have a new learning curve, and that is housing. And not only providing enough room for people to live and work, but also they prescribe certain housing types, which I'll cover here a little bit in a moment. So what basically the Department of Commerce, as part of House Bill 1220, which was approved, I believe, back in 2020, not that long ago, back in 2020, provided guidance to jurisdictions to address our housing affordability issue. This isn't just affordable housing, but this is housing affordability based largely on annual median income. Basically, a number of jurisdictions had not been providing an adequate amount of housing for people making less than 100% of annual median income. And that had created a series of housing crises, which caused people to have to move out of areas into others, making a number of people who are key service providers like teachers and firemen, having to travel substantial distances just to be able to serve a particular community. The growth in the Seattle area, largely with our technology industry, have brought a number of higher-end employees into our region, which again further exacerbated our housing supply issues, which were already not adequate. We were not building enough homes fast enough, and the homes that we were building are not affordable. And that is kind of the crisis that we're kind of in right now. It's led to a number of our homelessness issues. And I think we all know somebody who is living someplace other than where they'd like to because they can't find a place to own or rent. So the Department of Commerce, based upon this this bill that was passed, was required to put forth guidance in exactly how to address housing affordability amongst jurisdictions. So taking a look at some of these here, local jurisdictions are supposed to remove regulatory barriers and provide incentives to increase housing diversity. Commerce provided housing need targets through 2044, and those are broken out by income bands. That is the document that I provided to you earlier, I think yesterday, that is related to their most updated numbers, and I'll go over that chart a little more in depth. This planning must assume Commerce's persons per household projections as well. Historically, we've always kind of focused our growth management planning on growth between today and sometime out in the future. What Commerce is seeing is that our existing household sizes are also shrinking over that period of time. So not only do we need to look at the people who are newly moving to our area, but we also need to address our aging community and the possibility that our persons per household numbers are going to decrease, which means you need more housing to serve the same number of people that you're serving in today's housing stock. So let's say I've got 10,000 homes right now that can serve 30,000 people. Later on in 2044, that 30,000 people, those same 10,000 homes would be some number lower, which means that we need to address those population numbers as well in our growth targets. That is a whole new world for Kitsap County, as we've never really reflected on the change of persons per household that could be occurring and its effect on our existing housing stock. And then jurisdictions must plan for the impacts of these housing types on their land supply and capital facilities analysis. So it isn't just about removing barriers and providing incentives. We also need to ensure that we are providing adequate roadways, adequate sewer systems, protecting the environment for these more concentrated and, in many cases, multifamily directed development. Let me pause there and see if there's any questions. Either raise your virtual hand or your real hand.
I don't see any questions at this time.
All right. So moving on. Okay, so what does this mean for Kitsap? Unincorporated Kitsap is predominantly single-family detached housing, and we have the zoning to match. If you take a look, generally the way our zoning breaks up in our urban areas, it's about 85% single-family detached housing, urban low, urban restricted, and about 15% multifamily and commercial type zoning where a multifamily is allowed. Kitsap County has been very interested. A lot of folks have moved to Kitsap County over the years because it's not Seattle, it's not Tacoma, and they really enjoyed, again, the single-family detached lifestyle. Now, with the growth that is coming and the costs related with growth and the costs related to that housing, we're kind of paying the price for that long-term development pattern. So single-family detached homes, either to rent or buy, are out of the range of many households making less than 100% annual median income. It's about $87,000 a year for, I think, a family of four. So people are finding, generally, if you want to take a look at what that is from a rent standpoint, from a generally $87,000, you should be paying roughly around $1,700 all in for housing. So that is, if you're renting an apartment, that's rent, that is utilities, all of that should be around $1,700. Anybody who's actually tried to rent a two-bedroom anything in Kitsap County knows that $1,700 is not attainable. There are very, very few of those units, and not nearly enough for the folks who are making that limited income. And like I said before, 80% of our current zoning is an existing single family. I apologize, I think I said 85% previously. It's 80%. So when we're looking at the capacity of our urban growth area for new development, 80% of that capacity is in the single family zones, basically meant for single family attached and maybe a duplex or two. So our existing urban growth areas, where we stay today, is very, very focused on single-family detached housing. And the comp plan update will need to be amended to significantly increase opportunities, and I emphasize the word significantly, for multifamily and missing middle housing. Missing middle housing is basically townhomes, row housing, cottage housing, triplexes, fourplexes, etc., to be able to provide potentially a lower price point. Commissioner Smith.
Yes, thank you. So I love that the comp plan update will need to be amended to increase opportunities for these townhomes, row housing, and triplexes. I would say we'll also meet the need of our older, aging population who are looking to downsize from that traditional detached single home they've had in Kitsap County, too. We're seeing those trends as our populations are growing older together. It's one of the fastest growing demographics in Kitsap County is that person over the age of 60. So I think creating this missing middle is also going to address that older population in Kitsap. So I just appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Definitely something that is needed. Obviously, the baby boomers have been retiring. The Navy presence has brought a lot of people through our community over time. And a lot of those folks are returning to Kitsap County as they believe it is one of the best places that they stayed when they were in the Navy or the traveling public. So again, our quality of life is something that is well sought after. Other questions before I move on to the next slide? I apologize, these slides are so text heavy, but we want to put them online. And I don't want people to have to watch this presentation to understand what I'm saying.
Right. Is how does the apartments fit into this? Are they counted as housing?
Apartments are multifamily housing. So it's either rent or buy. So it has to be a household someone can live in. So when I say multifamily, I'm largely talking about apartments and condominiums.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
If there's no other questions. So I provided this table to you. I guess the introductory for this is we knew this was coming. We knew Commerce was providing guidance. What we did not know is the severity of our shortfall. I guess we should have assumed that if we are so single family detached heavy, that if we tried to fix that, we were going to have a bigger fix than most. We're not quite prepared for the breadth that Commerce is proposing. And also, we were not prepared for the lack of flexibility in Commerce's housing need numbers. And again, these are not necessarily targets. These are done in a basic analysis that takes a look at our demographics, takes a look at the people living in our community, and takes a look at real estate values. So while you might hear me complain about this process, I cannot say the problem is not real, that these are issues that we do need to address over time. I just have some concerns about how Commerce is going about it. But I sent you a Excel spreadsheet. I tried to get it in PDF so that people wouldn't have all the various tabs and potentially get confused, but it didn't work very well. So I gave you the Excel spreadsheet. If you have that either on your screen or in front of you, please take a look at the allocation method A, tab, or page. That is the one that the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council has been discussing. That's the county, the cities, and the tribes have been talking about how to address our housing needs countywide and how these housing needs should be dispersed amongst our various jurisdictions. So I have that here on my screen. Basically, what you see here, take a look at the top two rows, as that is unincorporated Kitsap County. Basically, it takes first a look at the estimated housing supply. Basically, we have almost 70,000 units in Kitsap County as of 2020, and then breaks down those units by percentage of annual median income. And each of them kind of have a single row except for 0 to 30%. I probably should have in my email explained what PSH meant. That is permanent supportive housing. So their permanent supportive housing is housing that is meant for people who need some kind of assistance. That can be substance abuse issues, that can be homelessness issues, it can be a number of things. So when you think personal supportive housing, think Pendleton Place. When you think about non-permanent supportive housing, pretty much now we're talking about private rentals, accessory dwelling units, other things that somebody making less than 30% AMI could afford. That can be your a kid just coming out of high school, getting his first job. It can be a number of folks, but there's a substantial number of those people in our community that without a housing option are becoming homeless more every year. And then as you see, it graduates up 30 to 50%, 50 to 80%, 80% to 100, 100% to 120, and then 120 and above. So generally what you're looking at when you're looking at these percentages, when you think about housing types, the way our real estate in Kitsap County generally works is that you cannot get into anything that is not multifamily at less than 50% annual median income. So when you're taking a look at these things, you need to be looking at this row here, allocation method A. That is how many units we need between 2020 and 2044 to accommodate our growth patterns. And when you're looking, you need to be adding these three numbers together to get the idea of exactly how many new multifamily units we need to be providing. That's not the missing middle housing that Commissioner Smith was talking about previously. The missing middle housing of townhomes, row housing, cottage housing fits in here between 50 and 80% and 80 to 100%. And of course, all real estate is location based. So how we can make these general statements, it can be a little questionable at times. You gotta take it with a grain of salt, but we are trying to, again, make some general assumptions about housing types and exactly what kind of housing we need. So if you take a look at those three rows, Kitsap County needs to provide roughly around nearly 6,300 new units of multifamily housing. That is a lot of multifamily housing. Additionally, we also need to accommodate some of our rural population growth in our urban areas, because obviously it's going to be very, very hard to find anything in those lower income bands in our rural areas. You're not going to be able to buy a 2.5 acre lot. You're not going to be able to rent a 2.5 acre lot out in the rural areas. And we certainly don't want to be promoting multifamily housing out in the rural areas, even though we're proposing people are to be moving out there. We do expect a lot more of the 120% is going to be occupying our rural areas over time. But again, our long-standing issue is we are trying to reduce the growth in rural areas. Thus, we are trying to encourage more. I know this is a very data-dense slide, so I'm going to stop here, and I can go back and re-explain if I didn't explain well or if this spurs other questions, which I would not blame if it does.
Mr. Shattuck.
Yeah, Eric, and I just want to look at, of course, we're doing comp planning. We're always trying to balance things. And you, I think, very clearly and correctly said, geez, we need to not promote growth in the rural areas. But isn't there a sweet spot here for ADUs? Isn't there an opportunity to say, hey, we don't want apartment buildings, but we can cheaply, quickly, and efficiently pick up some of the non-PSH or just the permanent supportive housing with an ADU process?
Yes, especially in our urban areas. Kitsap County has really relaxed the regulations regarding accessory dwelling units in its urban areas. Obviously, people are making 0 to 30% AMI. I have oftentimes other needs. They don't always own a car. They need to be close to services, whether it be groceries or, in certain cases, employment services or just general employment. Being out in Hansville or Seabeck or Burley is a long ways away from, again, jobs, things like that. So, yes, we do want to encourage accessory dwelling units in the rural areas, but we predominantly want to focus them, again, in the urban areas, close to services, close to employment, close to the things that people making that little amount of money and have fewer opportunities for vehicles, especially as we address what I'll talk about here in a little bit, our dearth of transit service in many of our urban areas.
I'd like to make a comment on the ADUs, and I totally agree with Richard. I think that's a resource there that we should encourage. One of the drawbacks, I think, to creating an ADU on your property, the last time I checked, it was maybe a year and a half ago, you need to apply for a conditional use permit. The application fee for that process is $9,000. That's a deal killer for a lot of people. I don't have any idea why $9,000 is being applied as a fee for an ADU, for a conditional use permit. I think conditional use permits are broadly applied, of course, but just for this specific case, for an ADU, I think can make an exception and lower that fee to something more manageable.
Having been around from when we imposed the conditional use permit requirement, it was largely intended to be a disincentive to doing accessory dwelling units in the rural area. We have a substantial amount of lots in the rural areas, more than our other county counterparts. There was a lot of subdivision done. There was a lot of clamoring for the county to ratchet down the allowed growth in the rural areas through a number of methods that we really don't want to explore. But one of the things that we did do is say, okay, we will impose this conditional use permit process, which, again, was intended to be a disincentive. Very likely, we will, in alternative three, be removing that conditional use permit requirement from that. So not just reducing fees, but removing the need for a conditional use permit. Because honestly, an ADU does not need a conditional use permit. It does not necessarily need a public hearing. We hold ADU hearings all the time, and very few people ever come to testify. It's somebody building a unit over the top of their home. And honestly, what it ends up doing is it ends up causing people to build these on the quiet. They're doing them, they're renting them, but they are not necessarily getting them permitted as such. And in one of our alternatives, we are going to explore that. I think Colin may want to correct something I just said. So, Commissioner Smith, before I go to you, can I go to Colin?
Yeah, I don't have anything really to add to that, but I just wanted to say that we do have a different fee for conditional use permits for ADUs. Still quite high. It's $5,400 at the moment, but it is a separate line item. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
It's $5,400, you say?
Yeah, $4,200 plus the hearing examiner fee makes it about $5,400 or so. Yes.
It still seems a little high.
For sure. Yeah.
Commissioner Smith.
So this information is just sinking in with me, and we brought up the point about transportation and concerns linking to transportation. It makes me think about infrastructure in general. Do we think, and I don't want to put you on the spot, it's just a question, it's probably a rhetorical question, do we think we have enough land supply for this additional housing with the environmental impacts that it could result in? I'm thinking about even water supplies.
From a water supply standpoint, that's kind of the least of our overall concerns. Again, because we're not putting them out in the rural areas where everybody's drawing out of somewhat unregulated wells, we are using municipal water services. So Silverdale Water, KPUD, again, well-regulated. They monitor their aquifers very closely. So I will say that we did adopt population numbers through the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. We are really, really struggling to normalize these number of units with those population numbers. Again, we adopted the population first. These came after. Obviously, if you're going to provide more allowed units in the same amount of space as you used to have single family, there's going to be more people in there. So I'm going to cover that a little bit more in the future, and we are coming up, and we are talking to Commerce about, hey, you guys provide us lots of guidance. We really need guidance on how we are going to basically meet both our population number and your housing targets. I have that meeting tomorrow, which I'm super excited about.
Okay.
When it comes to other infrastructure, we are looking, again, to locate these in urban areas that have existing needs. So, again, we are trying to, again, have them in places where transit can be provided, but also places where roadway improvements are already needed. It's one thing to have to fix Ridgetop Boulevard to handle a lot of people. It's another thing to have to fix Ridgetop Boulevard and Anderson Hill Road because we spread the population out amongst the two locations.
Commissioner Shattuck.
Just one other quick question, Eric. I know the other number that's kind of a hard number is down in the emergency beds, where we need to add 1,000 emergency beds to unincorporated Kitsap County. And I think we were okay in Silverdale as a regional center, but how about emergency beds outside of Silverdale? So, for example, can we put an emergency bed in an urban high area of Kingston, or do we need a different zoning?
Honestly, emergency housing is allowed in pretty much all of our multifamily, commercial, industrial zones. Smaller adult family homes are allowed in the single family. Some of those can also be considered. The number that I have here is roughly around 612. So I think you might be looking at the alternative B that had the 1,000. But again, 612 is not nothing. We are currently constructing a shelter out on Mile Hill Drive. We purchased a property that's going to handle 100 or so more beds. Obviously, that is a good start. I think one of the bigger concerns is, again, this permanent supportive housing. That is substantially more expensive housing, not just to build, but to maintain. It took Pendleton Place years to get up and running, and that is just a very small number of beds. And that's calculated in Bremerton's need, not our need. I would say that we do provide these opportunities, and we do kind of want to spread them around. Another component of Commerce's guidance is Bremerton obviously has carried a lot of the load for low-income housing over the years. that is not necessarily equitable over time. We need to be providing some of those opportunities in Silverdale and Kingston. However, there is kind of the struggle that you need not just the affordable housing, but you also need the support services. And oftentimes it's easier to expand services in one area, or at least more cost effective to do so, than it is to create a whole new system someplace else. So while I understand the desire to kind of spread this out outside of Bremerton, I do see it being potentially more costly and potentially having problems not succeeding due to the fact that it just doesn't have the connection to support services, employment, et cetera, at the time in which the units need them. Everything about planning is chicken and egg. Any other questions on this data-heavy slide?
I would just give a cautionary note to everybody as you read these numbers. It isn't, those numbers aren't supposed to appear overnight. This is a 20-year look out of where we should be in 20 years. So it's a gradual increase. It would be great if we could do a rapid increase, but the world doesn't quite work that way. Anyway.
Yeah, and when we are also talking about some of these lower income housing types, we aren't just talking about public projects. Obviously, permanent supportive housing is going to be a public project. Probably a large quantity of 0 to 30% are. But we are also looking at incentives for affordable housing in private projects where you have both market rate income homes as well as affordable housing income homes. And we are looking at property tax incentives to encourage private property to be private property owners to be thinking in that way. And hopefully providing, again, kind of a diversity in individual projects rather than having a low income building over here and a market rate over here. Some kind of interconnectivity has proven to be beneficial through some studies nationwide. All right, so going on, what has Eric been doing the last month that he delayed this? What I've been doing is absorbing that table I showed you. The county and city has been negotiating on exactly what those numbers should end up looking like. And then we have to figure out exactly how that's going to affect the alternatives. And will any of those have an impact on our public process we've had so far? So basically what we'll be presenting to the Board of Commissioners on April 10th, next Monday. Yes, I got the date right. April 10th. That's a public hearing. Everyone can come and testify. Is alternatives in which alternatives 1 and 3 look exactly the way that you saw them previously. Alternative 2 looks almost the exact same way as well. However, we have now made alternative 2 the most populous alternative. Going back to the how do you balance housing and population, if you have to include that much more housing, you are now going over the top of your population numbers. In certain urban growth areas like Silverdale, by quite a large margin. So now, some of the calculations we looked at is we were looking at areas and we're saying, okay, this area was going to develop out at 15 dwelling units an acre. That is not a particularly high density multifamily complex by any stretch of the imagination. What we did in a lot of these is we, with our incentives and with a suite of potential regulatory reforms, to make multifamily and missing middle housing easier, cheaper, and faster, we do expect that people are going to be building higher and more of these. So instead of calculating, say, 15, 18 dwelling units an acre in some of our multifamily zones, we're now thinking closer to 25, maybe 30 dwelling units an acre. Obviously, we have height caps. Places like downtown Silverdale, we actually, in this alternative, are proposing no maximum density. You can go with as many units as the height will allow you, which is a very flexible way to hopefully provide housing in a particular manner. What we were finding is we had height numbers that allowed a whole bunch of height, but we had a 30 dwelling unit an acre cap on urban high, which basically meant that people were who were doing multifamily were doing a lot of three-bedroom apartments that were getting very large units, which, again, were not affordable. Hopefully, by increasing the density numbers, we have an opportunity to bring more people into a smaller smaller area and allow developers to think more flexibly about not just having one type of unit, but having multiple types of units, knowing that you have, again, that flexibility for unit for additional density. The growth continues to be focused in Silverdale and Kingston, but we, instead of really being centers focused, like we had talked about previously, downtown Silverdale, downtown Kingston, we really have now had to kind of branch out the regulatory reform concepts to pretty much all of our multifamily zones and all of our commercial zones. When you look at a commercial zone, especially in this day and age, it is not necessarily being developed all as retail or all as service provided. What you're finding a lot in Greaves Way, what you're finding a lot in Bremerton and Port Orchard, is some of these commercial areas are being built with multifamily housing. So when you're thinking about the zoning, when you're looking at the maps, look at the commercial zones as a possibility for multifamily housing. You see it in a lot of other communities outside of Kitsap County, whether it be Tacoma, Everett, Linwood is currently going through that. A lot of those centered around mall redevelopments, which we have a mall, and depending on who you're talking to, it could be a mall that could benefit from a certain amount of redevelopment. Not necessarily doing away with the mall, but maybe taking advantage of some of that large paved area that was rarely used when retail was good, now is barely used now that retail is bad. Or not retail bad, but retail is diminishing. So the maps remain unchanged except for there's one change to the South Kitsap urban growth area along the Bethel corridor that I would like to show you. This was proposed in Alternative 3, thus we have been taking public comment on this since the beginning. So while this is a change in the Alternative 2 map, it is moving something from Alternative 3 into Alternative 2, thus not affecting our several months long public process. Where is that area? If everyone can see the map here. This is along the Bethel corridor. This is the Fred Meyer complex. This is obviously Sedgwick Road and Bethel. This area in through here was predominantly urban low zoning, again, that single-family detached housing. By bringing it in as commercial, we can look at the impacts of multifamily housing. We could also look at the impacts of commercial development if necessary. But on top of that, what it does is it takes a look at this area at the maximum amount of environmental impact and capital facilities needs. As the Planning Commission and Board has conversations later on in the year, after the Environmental Impact Statement and Capital Facilities plans are out, we can talk about whether this area should be commercial or maybe it should be urban medium, or maybe it should be a mix of urban medium and urban high to be able to provide that multifamily housing. It's proposed as commercial right now because we have had a public process. People have had the opportunity to comment on it as commercial, just not an alternative to. So this is the only part of the mapping that is changing to accommodate, again, a much larger number of multifamily units. Let me pause there and see if there's any questions or gasps.
And I would remind everyone, we're still just setting the boundaries here of the study. We're not making a commitment at this time that this is what's going to happen.
Yes, and it is intended to be a suite of options. You can pick and choose from these alternatives. So when you're looking at all three of them, realize that when we're having that conversation about the preferred alternative, you don't have to fall in love with any one of these three today. You can pick and choose and propose something different that could become the preferred alternative in the beginning of 24. I think we have Commissioner Soler and then Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. Are you seeing any interest in redevelopment of office space that's going for such a low price per square foot to apartment conversions?
I think we are seeing a number of, not necessarily in unincorporated Kitsap. I do believe there are some inside the cities, but region-wide, there's a substantial amount of pressure for that right now. Again, office space may not bounce back as well as people are expecting. We do have the Navy in town, which is a nice stabilizing factor when things are bad, but also never really lets us get too low. So even with some of the office rates, I think the property owners are still making money today, which of course makes redevelopment more challenging. I do see office space transitioning. More than that, though, I see some of our more aging retail complexes, like some of those on Silverdale Way where the grocery outlet is located, maybe the mall, probably has a better possibility of redevelopment rather than some of the office space, especially in the Silverdale areas. I do expect that some of that office space may start to see a medical pressure on it over time. Of course, not every office can be turned into a medical center easily or cheaply, but I do see portions of Silverdale and probably also portions of Port Orchard with some of its medical components needing to convert to more medical office space, especially as you start to move in concentric rings around the hospitals or urgent care facilities in places like Port Orchard and Silverdale.
Thank you.
Commissioner Smith.
So going back to this Bethel topic, it's interesting because this is a quieter part of town. It's got lots of small businesses, residential. I'm kind of curious to hear if there's been a lot of public comment on this area. And then that's my first question. And my other question is, if I remember right, the city limits were annexed right up until Sedgwick. Is that right? So this, and I'm wondering if the city limits of Bethel, that's also commercial at this point. I mean, remind me what that is, I guess is the question.
not a problem. Basically, this weird, choppy looking line is the city limits. So basically, when you're looking at it, this area is entirely wrapped around the city. It is commercial. Again, Fred Meyer here is the gas station. There's a lot of residential that's occurring on the other side of Ramsey. This area through here, it was commercial in 2006. It was commercial in 2012. It was pulled back with a certain amount of hue and cry in 2016. I think there's a number of folks. This area on the other side was also commercial. It was also pulled back. I think we may hear some testimony from some folks in here who would like to see the same treatment over time. Obviously this is a quieter area. The road is not quite the same. You do have some residential located, come on now, there we go, located down in this area through here. Oops. Okay, that's not what I was supposed to do. But there are large tracts of land. Additionally, I do believe that there is a certain amount of construction the city of Port Orchard is expecting on Geiger Road. So as you start to get connection between here, mixed use or multifamily development can work quite well with those, all accessing Bethel Road, which again has easy access to the highway and is easy access for transit. That is also one of the interesting challenges with housing, is they want you to put it by services like transit, which is usually along highways, but they don't want you to put a lot of multifamily along highways because of air quality and other equity related issues. So it's kind of, again, that's not really a chicken and egg. That's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type scenario. But from a location for multifamily, and this is an excellent opportunity, and we have talked to the city of Port Orchard about it.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I'm curious, on the other side of the road, like, why not expand it if you're on one side of the road to the other side of the road?
Largely, it came down to the population and employment numbers. But we are currently coming to a point where we are going to be exceeding our numbers. I will also hit on one point here. Commerce is kind of making some statements that, yes, you can exceed your population numbers. However, if you're going to do so, you cannot be expanding your urban growth area boundaries at the same time. So that could mean some things for some of our folks who are asking for urban growth area expansion. I can kind of understand their thought process. However, there are some things that you may need to expand urban growth area boundaries for. I'll show you a map of Kingston here in a moment, where I don't have a lot of places to put people to start with. I have a great place that I could expand the UGA and put in urban medium. but that requires an expansion of the urban growth area boundary. Again, meeting with Commerce tomorrow to get some greater specificity on what they really mean by that, but I'm just happy they're starting to get to the point where they're acknowledging that their housing targets are running jurisdictions like counties with flexible urban growth area boundaries headlong into known growth management hearings board cases. All right. Any other questions? Moving on. So also some of the, I think I've kind of talked about some of these. These are, we've increased maximum densities. Most urban high is now allowed to go to 60 dwelling units an acre. And again, urban high in the Silverdale Center has no maximum. Generally expanded heights as well, though those heights are usually capped around 45 or 55 feet. So you're not going to see a big monolith pop up in the middle, but in this community, 45 feet still feels pretty high. 55 feet is probably more appropriate in places like Silverdale, but maybe not Kingston. Also, we're looking at expanded flexibility. Again, that regulatory reform I was talking about, that would be setbacks, lot dimensions, possibly some reduced parking. And this would be beyond just the Silverdale and Kingston centers. And then probably for the center areas, we'd also be exploring incentives. So we'd be looking at things like changing SEPA thresholds to make it easier for multifamily to develop. We've got to figure out if that's an increase or decrease. Probably depends on the SEPA component. Tax exemptions like the multifamily tax exemption. If you're building affordable housing, you can avoid paying property taxes for up to 12 years. And some of those types of incentives, as well as maybe some road improvements like that, may also be provided outside the Silverdale and Kingston centers, but some of those are probably going to have to stay in the downtown areas, as again, we're really looking to maximize the benefit of those types of tax, because it isn't a tax. They don't have to pay the taxes, but you know what? Everybody else gets to pay the taxes, so it's more of a tax spread across everybody, thanks to the calculation of our 1% property tax. So I don't want to make it look like no one's getting any money. It's just the money gets spread out amongst everybody for the benefit of having either affordable housing or multifamily housing in our community. Questions on those policies before I move on? I don't have a lot more, I promise. So, looking here at Kingston, this is alternative two. This was that area I was talking about. It's located right on Linvog Road. The downtown area is light right here, but it's outside the UGA boundary. Obviously, to meet our multifamily housing goals, providing opportunities up through there, especially if there's going to be a sewer line running along Linvog, could be extremely beneficial. So we have a little bit of concern about Commerce's, you can go over your population number, just don't expand your urban growth area boundaries. Another concern is as we are intensifying growth and creating more mixed-use opportunities, certain retail and certain employment uses don't really play well with residential development. You can't have heavy truck traffic or anything that's particularly noisy or particularly smelly around these types of facilities, yet we still need those types of jobs. We can't necessarily put them anywhere else without creating conflict. So the question is, if we can't expand urban growth area boundaries, what do we do with some of these employment uses that might be incompatible with the new vision for a more of a mixed-use 24/7 downtown Silverdale? Already talked about Silverdale at length. This is the Central Kitsap urban growth area. We were not focused a lot of growth in this area. Everything in red and black is either commercial or urban high. We did not get a lot of population in this area due to Puget Sound Regional Council's feeling that because this area wasn't associated, it really shouldn't be getting growth. However, there is a bus that runs right down Highway 303, and there's lots of multifamily opportunities down 303. So we are going to be proposing, again, greater densities in the CKUGA and then having to float that past the Puget Sound Regional Council, as we will be exceeding our population numbers potentially in this area, one that they are particularly sensitive to us exceeding our population numbers for, again, reasons I don't fully agree with, but we fought that fight multiple years ago. Port Orchard talked about. So kind of moving forward on this, we still have the update due in 2024. I am a month late now. So in the preliminary alternatives are intended to be that we're having a hearing on the 10th. The board is intended to make some kind of decision by the 19th. From there, we're going to do the environmental impact statement, draft comprehensive plans and development regulations will also be put together as long as the capital facilities plan to be released in October, probably around Halloween. So at that point, you'll kind of see have a full package of the potential impacts of these. And then between October and probably the end of February, we'll be going through and kind of working through the preferred alternative. To a degree, this delay has been beneficial because these types of decisions were supposed to be made around the holidays in the old schedule. The holidays are not a good time for anybody to be making significant decisions, not for the public to be participating, and definitely not for a more robust conversations. Everyone's trying to get things done then. So this could be beneficial. And then we hope to have kind of the final documents available in June for an adoption in October of 2024. So that again is how we are looking to move forward. We do have until December 31st, 2024, but again, December 31st is the holidays as well. Decisions made during the holiday season sometimes can be rushed or not as fully thought out as ones that have a little more breathing room in the fall. Hopefully this answered some of the questions of what I've been doing with my life over the last month, and hopefully I've also allayed any concerns that any potential changes are moving outside the existing public process. We have been very clear throughout all this about potential increases in densities, potential increases in height. People have provided testimony about that, largely encouraging that. We have had to intensify, again, the housing and the density, but again, it's all been within the realm of the things that we have been presenting on ever since July of last year, and definitely have been talking about through this alternative process. We've tried to maintain that integrity while trying to address the moving sands of Commerce's guidance that are currently under my feet.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Baker. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you in the future.
Let me just ask. Go ahead. Quick question. Eric, on the extra comments you sent from people who commented, just real quickly, two quick questions. One is there was a comment from a Ms. Banks about property that's off of Greaves Way, now zoned industrial. She says, hey, can we look at making this into commercial?
Uh-huh.
And I don't. Where is that? That seems to make sense to me for all the reasons you've just said. We've got a lot more flexibility with commercial than industrial. Greaves Way seems to be a corridor that's developing that way. So just thoughts on that?
Colin can correct me, but I do believe that is located in both alternatives 2 and 3.
Okay.
As commercial.
Okay.
So it has been proposed in that area for that blue area. I think that blue square that is over the top of Greaves Way, so there's a little snippet on the south end, and then the rest of it's on the north end. It's in alternate 2 and 3,
okay,
and intended to be reviewed.
Final question is, we had this comment,
correct,
from the Port of Kingston saying, geez, can we get together and talk about this compound? I assume that the Port of Kingston knows about what's going on, is in the loop. I was just surprised at that comment.
No, the Port of Kingston has been working closely with county staff, but also been working very closely with the Kingston Community Advisory Council, who is also having a subcommittee process where they're kind of talking about these things. I think they do have a few divergent thoughts as it applies to the downtown. The port is very interested in requiring mixed-use development down in the downtown area. When I mean downtown, I mean the area around the ferry terminal, not the area up by the grocery store necessarily. I think just recently, I believe the Planning Commission reviewed changes that actually undid that about 3 years ago that allowed outright multifamily. I think the way that we'll end up addressing that type of thing is we will put the mixed use requirement in alternative 3, and we'll put the current state of affairs, which is you can do just outright multifamily in alternative 2, So again, the port, we can see the review of the port issue thoughts, and we can see the Kingston Community Council's thoughts together. And again, the Planning Commission, board, public can all have that conversation about what is the best answer. Requiring mixed use, I have a few concerns with. There's enough issues with redeveloping downtown. Adding a requirement for a mixed use component, a commercial venture on the bottom, seems problematic, especially considering that I believe the port's current master planning process is really focused solely on commercial. So it seems like there is a good amount of commercial opportunity still occurring down there on where they have their parking lots now. Seems like doing both might be more commercial and not enough residential, because again, having a tourist community is good, but really can suffer in the winter months when folks are not coming by quite as frequently.
Thank you. Okay. I don't see any more comments at this. So
then
thank you.
I will burn out or fade away, depending on how you guys would like to see it. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. Okay. That concludes our work study. That brings us to item G on the public comment period. And I see we have at least one person, Mr. Palmer.
I'm assuming you can hear me because I unmuted.
Yes.
One question I wanted to pose while Eric was still there was related to the buildable lands report. That, of course, supposedly concluded last year. My review of that report did not reveal the fact that it had addressed the issues Department of Commerce is now asking us to look at with regard to multiple family housing. And an emphasis on that in the planning process. And the spreadsheet that Eric reviewed in his discussion, that again, I don't recall it being in the buildable lands report. And I'm concerned that in spite of the fact that housing is a topic of great concern now, that it's still a stepchild issue when it comes to land use allocation. And that never seems to get addressed. Property rights, another significant goal of GMA, another stepchild issue that we get pacifying provisions in the comprehensive plan that says, yeah, we're addressing property rights, but the fact is you aren't. I say you because as a the Planning Commission, your arm of Kitsap County, those kind of issues are not being seriously addressed. Haven't been in 20 years. Or more since we've had the advent of the Growth Management Act. And in the last go around in 2016, Kitsap Alliance of Property Owners provided a very substantive analysis of the failure of Kitsap County to address the housing issue. Now you're being pushed by the Department of Commerce to do it. But it isn't, according to my recollection, I'll have to go back and review the buildable lands report. It's not addressed there, and yet the reason we say we can't expand the urban growth area is because the buildable lands report didn't say that we had to. That's putting it in mild terms. So if we're going to say on one hand that buildable lands report is the driver for the comprehensive plan or one of the significant drivers, then we need to have the stuff that Department of Commerce is now pushing the county toward addressed in that buildable land report, and I don't think it is.
Okay. Appreciate the comments, Mr. Palmer. I would request that when you come up with these observations, if you could send that in a written form to us so that we can discuss that in further detail, and any proposed solutions that you are thinking of would be highly helpful for the Planning Commission.
I will do that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. I do not see any other people wishing to speak. So I will close this public comment period. That brings us to item H for the good of the order. We have several items listed here. We have the April 18th Planning Commission meeting. That will be a presentation training from the County Prosecutor's Office on GMA, the role of the Planning Commission, and additional information and background. I would highly encourage all of the commissioners to attend. If you're unable to attend, since it is a recorded meeting, please review the recording so that you can come up to speed on what was discussed. We do have a joint Planning Commission Board of County Commissioners meeting on April 24th at 11:30. You can attend either virtually or in person. We do have a draft annual report will be sent out to all our members on the 10th. We will review that before the 24th joint meeting. And if you could, if you want to see that, if you've got comments or errors, whatever, please get your comments back by the 13th. Let's see.
Excuse me, is the April 24th meeting, could that be virtual or not?
Yes.
It is.
Yes. All the meetings now are hybrid, so yeah. And let's see, additional information, meeting invitations are going to be forthcoming from the clerk of the County Commissioner's Office and that. Okay, is there any comments for the good of the order at this time from the other members? Going once, twice, okay. So, we will try a different ending here. Unless there are any objections, we will close the meeting. So, unless I hear an objection at this time, nope, we are adjourned. Good night.
Thank you.